If you're rocking to get up and it's not a rocking chair, it's time for the Joint Relief Institute. Fast relief, covered by Medicare. 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. 11 minutes after 12 o'clock on a beautiful Friday afternoon, October 21st. You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN, and I'm glad that you are. Andrea Haines is in the studio. She's the editor for Blue Sky Innovation in the Tribune. You can read that when the paper comes to your doorstep during the week or online at chicagotribune.com. Andrea, welcome back to The Business Lunch.
Thanks, Steve. Great to see you.
And she comes in every week just about to talk about different things that you've written about or that we'll see in the paper soon. I am so excited about this company, Songfinch, that you write about. Has this been in the paper yet?
Yes, and we had so much fun with it that we're excited that you want to talk about it.
It's just, okay, so Songfinch is this new Chicago company, and for $200, right, they will write a custom song for you, which sounds okay, but these are real singer-songwriters, and they produce, pretty quality stuff.
Yeah, I think when we looked at it, we listened to some samples while they were still in beta because they just launched on Tuesday of this week. We were listening to them. We were kind of like, yeah, they're okay. But realizing that when it's lyrics about you and you've kind of chosen the mood and it's all about you and whatever, your family, your loved one, your anecdotes, you're going to love it.
And so you did this, right?
And sure enough, that's exactly what happened. We sat down with the Blue Sky team. The Blue Sky team just, we just turned 3 years old. Blue Sky Innovation launched 3 years ago exactly. So we thought, let's do an anniversary song, and we'll talk about people on staff and just, around the office, funny things that happen. So we brainstormed a list of anecdotes about everybody and sent it in.
And, well, we're not going to play the whole thing, but just to give it people, and so also, though, you wanted a sort of a beatbox version of a song, right?
Yeah, so you get to choose when you fill out a form online. You get to include all your anecdotes or your keywords or people who you want to mention or all those, the content
right.
that you want in it. But you also get to choose the mood of the song.
I'm more singer-songwriter guy, so this isn't quite my cup
plenty,
of tea. But
yeah, so we wanted a female rapper just to be sassy. We couldn't get that. They don't have a female rapper exactly signed yet, but they came up with this, which I think you're going to play a little of.
I'm feeling through fly, up in the blue.
This is the Blue Sky Innovation custom-made song from Songfinch.
Yep. And so, yeah, we're not subjecting you to the entire thing, but there's lyrics in there about everyone on the team, the writers, the editors, funny things around the office. We have a little yellow couch from IKEA. The yellow couch gets mentioned. Just kind of the key points in your own life.
The stuff that registers with you.
Exactly.
The yellow couch means nothing to me.
Exactly.
But when you hear it. Okay, so I'm thinking $200, who's going to do this? What sort of vain person is going to get? But it's really not about, what a great wedding gift to a couple
exactly,
or
yep,
anniversary gift, birthday gift, sort of thing like that.
Yeah, I think that's how they're billing it right now, that it would be, basically a custom gift. I mean, you could see it for a family reunion or an occasion like that where, again, your own personal anecdotes would make it work for
right.
you. It's not meant for public consumption and appreciation, but it's meant for the people in the know to kind of get it and have fun with it.
Just a cool, how about a family song,
Yeah, exactly.
People chipping in. And the other nice thing is that this is sort of a little bit away for songwriters in the area to make some cash.
Yeah, so they do use, they only have a few staff members, but they contract with, singer-songwriters. So for them, they get $100 to write a song. Doesn't, presumably take very much time. So it's kind of a cool way to tap into that community, let those folks earn a little extra money.
Okay, it's called Songfinch, and it's the most exciting thing of the week.
Yeah, so just on the music vein, I wanted to just throw in there that we just put up a slideshow because the iPod is turning 15 this weekend. Can
wow,
you believe that?
No.
Yeah, so just in the music vein, I wanted to give a shout out to that because the iPod, now we all use our phones, but you probably remember back in the day the iPod changed our lives.
And so that's at Blue Sky?
Yes, just up on Blue Sky just a few minutes ago.
I still carry an iPod with me in my workout bag every day, and you know what I use it for? It's what I wrap my earbuds around.
Oh, funny.
That's all I do. I plug it and wrap it around so that they don't get tangled up and then plug it into my phone when
yeah.
I go upstairs.
Yeah, if you've had your phone fall off the treadmill a few times, the iPod still comes in handy.
There's a tool available that's been built, I think, by a professor at Northwestern that will tell you who you're going to vote for.
Yeah, so you can actually try this yourself, but they also applied it in a wider way to look at people tweeting, where are they tweeting from, so they could identify it by state, and they found certain keywords that would indicate that you were likely to vote for either Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump.
And so they used an algorithm, right? So how did they come up with the algorithm?
Yeah, so they actually, the Northwestern folks didn't come up with it, but they adapted it to this election kind of usage.
Okay.
And they did it also in 2012. So this year they've done it, and they found it's kind of interesting to read just the keywords that are signs that you may vote for a particular candidate.
Okay, so in your article, the keywords to indicate that someone's going to vote for Trump, not Hillary Clinton, the keywords are lying, liberal, illegal, and money. Which is kind of funny, but yeah. I guess if you're describing yourself, you wouldn't use the word liberal often. For Clinton, single, humanity, rights, and y'all?
I know, y'all was the one that threw us. It really did. And, like, we weren't sure if that meant people were saying, you know, y'all need to stop supporting Trump or right, something, right. You know, like, if it was showing up in that kind of connotation. So, yeah, that one seemed kind of interesting.
And then going back to Barack Obama, they said three of the keywords were obscenities.
Yes, I guess that was like, you know, an edgier crowd. And I would
and
say
again, these are words that Obama supporters would be using in their tweets, not people tweeting about Obama or Obama supporters.
Exactly. At least that's what the, you know, the aggregate data indicated.
Right. So how do they use this information? Because it seems to me that, you know, all our tweets are public, right? So anyone with any sort of data mining tool can look at everything I've tweeted and sort of come up with a profile of me?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, in this case, they were kind of looking at aggregates to pinpoint how states would go, because, of course, that's what we all follow with presidential elections. But, yes, we've talked about many weeks in here. There's all kinds of ways people are looking at our social media data and making use of that.
There is some comfort in the fact that they said the material they use is not good when it comes to journalists, because we tend to tweet about things or post about things that don't necessarily reflect the way we think.
Yeah, that's true. Retweets do not equal endorsements, right? That's always the
line. That's what they say. Andrea Haines from Blue Sky Innovation, the editor there. Thanks very much for coming by.
Sure, thanks,
Steve. All right, one more time. How do people hear the song and tell me about Songfinch?
Really, I would say go to our site, because Songfinch has its website up, and you can go on there and you can find our song at like a / Blue Sky Innovation. But we have all the information in the story. So honestly, I think if you go there, you can click off and listen to our personal song, or you can get to their site and find a way to make your own.
Outstanding. Have a great weekend, Andrea.
You too, Steve.
12:22, you're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on Saturday. On 720 WGN. Bedell Shaw is in the studio. Bottle, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Thanks for having me back.
He's the CEO behind Turbo Appeal, so I'm going to have Bottle in here once every 6 weeks or so to find out whether or not Lake County's on the list yet.
And we're going to say yes very soon.
I hope so. So just quickly, so people know, we've talked about this before, but Turbo Appeal is a way that you're sort of revolutionizing the way people can appeal their property taxes.
Correct, on the residential and commercial side, correct.
And so it's just a website, and it's up in Cook County now?
Yes, up in Cook County and rolling out nationally.
And you plug in your data, and then all of it is sort of automatic?
Yes, exactly right.
Okay, so when you came up with that idea or any other business, did you have to go to venture capitalists to get some money?
We did.
Yeah, and that's what I want to talk about a little bit today, about someone who might have a great idea and the fact that they want to pursue it. They need the outside money. What do you think is the first thing people need to keep in mind when it comes to that?
Well, you have to be prepared.
Yeah.
I think you have to have a compelling story.
They talk about an elevator pitch. Is that the sort of thing you're talking about? Or?
Absolutely right. You need to really be able to tell your story and the solution in about 30 seconds and make sure it's compelling enough for them to want to listen to more.
And I would imagine, because, you know, I just working here and doing this job and working in the newsroom, I get hundreds of emails and pitches truly every day. And I will give some of them no more than 2 or 3 seconds. Like, it's boom, what you see, and I'm deleting before I've read the second sentence of it. And I would imagine if you're a venture capitalist, you're going to give things a little more attention, but still, you've got to grab their attention right away.
Absolutely right. And I think a part of that is doing research and understanding. Many venture capitalists have different theses. And so who are those that are going to be the ones that are more interested in what your solution is?
So it's like asking someone out on a date. You've got to find the right person.
That's exactly right.
Right? And I would imagine it's the sort of, did the first one person you approach say yes?
It was interesting. We did.
No, that's not the way it's supposed to happen.
I know. We got lucky. But yeah, the first time we said yes, I'll tell you, there was many no's thereafter.
Oh, that's the sort of thing then, right? You have to be a little thick-skinned.
Absolutely. You have to be ready. You have to be prepared for no and not take it personally.
How does someone prepare for that?
Well, I think you have to be convinced that you have a good product market fit, you have a revolutionary concept, and that those that understand it and are willing to be helpful in that conversation will be willing to listen. But those that just aren't, it's not part of their thesis, they're going to say no, and you move on to the next.
Right. And so I've had ideas before, you go to someone and you try to pitch them on your idea, and it's not always enough just to say, this is my dream, this is what I really want to do, and I think we can make it work, right? You've got to show how it's going to work for the venture capitalist.
Yeah, that's right. They need to believe that the opportunity is large enough and that you're creating a problem that's that's big enough for them to envision a return that's large enough for their LPs.
So it's got to be something that can grow quite a bit.
That's right.
How are we doing in Chicago when it comes to the venture capital market?
I got to tell you, I'm very proud of Chicago. As an entrepreneur in Chicago, I think we have a lot of advantages. You have organizations like 1871 and CEC, a lot of great venture. The community here is great. They're helpful. There's a lot of funding now coming to the city. I think Chicago's really on the map. So I think this is a great place to start business.
Explain that for me, because, you know, we're in a world where everything is shrinking. I mean, you're in connection with anyone via the internet or whichever way. Why does geography still matter when it comes to things like venture capital?
I think, you know, Chicagoans and in Midwest in general, there's still a sense of conservatism here. I think entrepreneurs in Chicago are building real businesses, and they've really done a lot of diligence into their idea, and they're coming to venture capitalists with, say, a fuller baked plan. Mm-hmm. And I think venture capitalists understand that Chicagoans, just by who we are, the nature of people living here, are kind of more prepared. There's less, I'd say, deals out there where it's just a concept, but it's more baked out.
So who's the shark in this dance, or the predator? Is it the venture capitalist looking for businesses, or is it the person with the idea looking for the venture capitalist?
Yeah, I think it goes hand in hand. I think that what's great about the community here is they're always willing to help, even if they're not going to invest in your business.
So is that not like that in other parts of the country?
It can be. I think it depends on who you are as an entrepreneur. Your experience, do you have maybe a win under your belt? I think here in Chicago, we've seen that people are more inclined to help regardless of if they're going to have a return on that favor in the future.
Okay, that's Badal Shah is here, the CEO of Turbo Appeal, and well, I'll have you back in 6 weeks or so. You'll have some news for me?
I think so.
Oh, good. Nice to see you again. Thanks for coming by.
You as well. Thank you very much.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch Friday afternoon. The Cubs are off today after a nice win last night, nice couple of wins last couple of days. And with any luck, they will put it away tomorrow at Wrigley Field. I know Kim was talking about that, but I also remember that I was in the situation we all were 13 years ago when we said, you know, I remember Mandy Antonacci is on the phone line. Mandy, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Hi, Steve. Thanks so much for having me. Always a pleasure.
I just interrupted myself, but I just wanted to tell you, Mandy writes about sports and the business of sports for Inc. magazine, Sports Illustrated, is a cauldron. And I was just going to say, you know, I remember 13 years ago in this position telling a good friend of mine, I'm like, you know, we got to be prepared for the fact that the Cubs are going to the World Series. And it didn't turn out so well. So I am not counting any chickens before they're hatched, but hopefully tomorrow will be a good day for us.
Oh, I hope so, Steve. Well, you know, if you were predicting something like that 13 years ago, I'm investing in you.
Well, yeah, it didn't work out so well 13 years ago, though. It turned out to a couple of problems at Wrigley Field. I was talking before the break about wearables. You know, wearables are the big thing. I've got a Fitbit on. I never thought I would be a Fitbit guy. And I wear one every day, follow it along, all of that stuff. But it's really a growth industry when it comes to apparel or technology. And you were talking about the fact that you work with a product yourself, I think, that deals with breast cancer in wearables. And I'm not sure I understand that. Can you explain that for me?
Sure. So basically, you know, there's a movement that's occurring in wearable tech that's moving more towards wearable health. So right now, Steve, with your Fitbit, along with the majority of the world, we're monitoring our sleep and our steps, which might now, you know, may seem a bit arbitrary right now, but these are small pieces of intelligence that help to inform bigger and potentially life-threatening diseases. The product I'm personally involved with is, and in the spirit of Breast Cancer Awareness Month, is a sports bra that can detect early stage breast cancer. So how this works is that there's actually sensors embedded inside the garment, and when you have a malignancy, there are cellular changes to your tissue that are detected through this garment, and it sends a signal through cloud-based technology, basically via app to your physician, that it's time for you to come and get checked.
And so this is the sort of thing that you would just, you know, be perfectly healthy and buy and then just wear when you exercise?
Exactly. You would basically wear it for a certain period of time to help detect those particular changes in your tissue. And for women, which is a majority of women that have dense breast tissue, mammography and even self-breast exams are virtually useless. So this is something specifically for that patient population.
And so you say wear it for a length of time. Would that be to develop like base data and then you could see an alternate to the data?
That's exactly right.
Okay, and it's not,
and, you know,
it's
even
not the sort of thing.
Looking at wearable devices as a whole, pretty soon doctors are going to be able to know our symptoms from our wearable device before we even walk into an office, which is really cool.
A wearable device that, like, closer to a Fitbit in that case?
A Fitbit, Apple Watch, a lot of these manufacturers are working on their algorithms. Even Fitbit, for example, has partnered with pharmaceutical companies to be part of their clinical trials. So patients will no longer need to go physically into a location to draw blood and test their levels. Those levels can be calculated and predicted directly from their wearable device.
That's just amazing where we're headed. I want to ask you one more question, though, about the sports bra, because I know people might have questions. If they do, are these available now, or is there a way people can get more information about them?
Right now, it is not available in the U.S. The goal is to launch it overseas and in indigenous populations next year. But there is a wonderful documentary that is out about it called Detected, and people can learn more looking at Circadia Health or just simply Googling IT bra.
IT bra. Okay, cool. I was in Ireland last week at this time, and I was in the south in Kerry talking to a guy who runs a restaurant there. I was traveled with a group I'd brought over of WGN listeners, and we went to this spot for lunch at the Ring of Kerry, and talking to the owner, John, and he says, oh, Chicago. He said, I'm going to be in Chicago next month. I said, yeah. He goes, yeah, I'm staying in Trump Tower. He said, that's where the Irish rugby team is going to be, and the Irish rugby team is playing the All Blacks at Soldier Field in the Chicago Rugby Festival. I think it's the 3rd and 4th of November. He said, I'm going to be in your town. I'm like, well, I'm right down the street. Come by. Little did I know that we'd be sitting here talking then a week later about rugby in the U.S. and how it is absolutely exploding. I had no idea.
Isn't that amazing, Steve? Rugby is currently the fastest growing team sport in our nation today. And I actually conducted a Twitter poll just to see, you know, if people were actually aware of this trend. 96% were completely unaware, as a majority assumed either soccer or lacrosse.
Would be the fastest growing, not rugby.
Not rugby. And, you know, what's interesting is how it's really becoming part of pop culture is that in 2008, it started in the U.S., through Touch Youth Leagues, which is incredibly smart because it provided both parents and kids a safer alternative to football. Right now, we have 2.1 million kids in the United States currently playing rugby.
And I read about that, the piece you wrote for Inc.com. It surprises me that, or it's just odd, isn't it? Because we think of rugby as kind of a rough and brutal sport, but it's the alternative to, and you wear no pads, you wear nothing like that. It's the alternative to a sport where you're all padded and helmeted up because it's more safe.
Exactly. You know, the style of rugby tackling that's actually done during the game is vastly different than that we see every Sunday during the NFL. So instead of using your head as a weapon, you're actually using your shoulder. And, you know, what further, I think, exacerbates this is that the propensity to use your head when it's not covered by a hard
shell
further diminishes.
I've always said if you want to improve the situation in the NFL, take away the helmets.
It's true. And, you know, Pete Carroll, the head coach of Seattle Seahawks, as well as even Ohio State's head coach, have adopted rugby-style tackling to significantly improve the tackle aspect of their game.
Okay, 2.1 million kids playing organized rugby in the U.S. I don't see them around. Is it a geographic thing? I mean, are they pretty much everywhere?
They are starting to pop up everywhere, Steve. And what's interesting about it is what you are going to soon see is the NFL's version of rugby, which is the National Rugby Football League, the NRFL, which is kicking off in the United States next spring.
What is that?
So this is basically NFL's version of rugby. So it's a professional unionized rugby league that kicks off next year.
Okay, I see. So it's the same old rugby. It's just that the NFL mm-hmm. is marketing it.
It's marketed by its own league, so it's literally called the NRFL, but it's basically the professional unionized league of rugby that's kicking off in the United States.
I gotcha. And so they'll have teams around the country?
They'll have teams around the country, yep. And they have a combine where they're scouting talent and they're growing and they're looking to launch this next spring.
Well, you made a reference, too, in the story about how this allows for equal participation, which I don't think that's the exact phrase, but it kind of struck me. The idea that mm-hmm. this is open to a lot more people. I don't want to say it's not as skill driven, but I mean, I guess it's more accessible to more players.
And, you know, that's one of the beauties of rugby, and I think one of the reasons why it's also taken off is because it provides equal opportunity for both men and women. You know, rugby is one of those unique sports where both the ball itself, the size of the ball, the size of the field, and also the rules of the game are the same for both boys and girls. So it provides equal opportunity for both genders.
All right, coming to, a diamond, a field, a pitch. What do you play rugby on?
Coming to a field.
Coming to a field near you, it will be rugby. Mandy Antonacci, thanks for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me, Steve, and go Cubs.
Yeah, we'll talk again soon. You can follow Mandy on Twitter at Mandy Antonacci. Common spelling.
Oh, boy, you keep window shopping. You browse around with...
1251, this is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGNR. You got stuff in your... Well, who doesn't have stuff in their basement? Louise Juckness and Kim Williams are in the studio. They are the brains behind Shop Melee, and they want to take pictures of it and sell it for you. How did I do? Is that pretty much it?
That's right on the money.
That's right, exactly.
We'll start with Louise. There's an index called Inc. Magazine's 5,000 Fastest Growing Private Companies. You guys are now at 231 on that, and I read that your business growth is at something like 1,700% over the past 3 years. Is that
correct? Yes, it is. Yes.
Tell me about Shop Melee. What is it?
So basically, we take people's clothing, shoes, purses, collectibles, all the way up to furniture, and we either put them on an online platform or sell them in a warehouse or sell them in an estate sale.
Is this something someone could do themselves on eBay?
They could, but it's a lot easier having somebody else do it.
Right.
Yeah. Because it's time-consuming, and it's a pain talking to people and dealing with the people, the clients.
How did the whole thing come about? How did it start?
It started actually out of our house, and I was just listing our own things, then listing my parents' things, and then friends' things, and then it got kind of out of control, and then Kim and I became partners 4 years ago.
It became out of control because you sort of became an eBay addict, right?
Yes, and we had too many things in our house.
And then, Kim, how did you get involved?
I came on board. Louise needed a partner, someone to kind of take it to the next level, and it didn't take us very long to outgrow our space in Oak Brook, and then we moved to Willow Brook and quickly filled that up, and yeah.
I'm assuming you guys knew each other before the business partnership?
We did family friend. Actually, my husband is partners with her dad.
You mean Bob the chauffeur?
Bob the chauffeur, yes.
Right. Okay, and so Louise, just come a little closer to the microphone.
Sure.
A good bit. All right, so you guys knew each other, and then you've got this business that's sort of taking off, and then you get into this work environment sort of relationship. How has that been?
Great.
Yeah?
We don't have a problem.
You both said it and looked at each other like you're hiding something.
No, not at all. We'll do that later.
Yeah.
No. We yin and yang it. We kind of front of the house, back of the house management.
And all right, so let's walk through it a little bit. So let's say, and actually I have a trunk full of stuff I brought in for you guys to look at today. So not really, Louise.
That's okay. We were like, we'll take it.
Client.
Yeah.
So I come to you and I say, look, I've got this stuff. I want to sell it. Then you look at it physically, take pictures of it, and then I keep custody of it, or how does that work?
If you have things like clothing, shoes, purses, you can bring them in. and they are looked at, they're inspected, and then we tell you if we can sell the item. If we can't sell them, you can take them back, or we will donate them for you. We use a
Morningstar Missionary.
Morningstar Missionary, yeah. It's a homeless shelter.
To donate them too, yeah.
Mm-hmm, and they come every Thursday. And in terms of furniture, we ask for pictures first before you bring them to the warehouse.
And
to see if it's sellable.
Well, what percentage is sold online and what percentage is sold at the warehouse?
Probably 50-50.
Yeah?
Yeah. Well, in terms of clothing.
Anything, yeah.
Clothing, it's about 95% online.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how much stuff do you turn away that people present to you?
Not a lot. We're more open than most consignment stores because we literally take anything from contemporary all the way up to haute couture.
And what percentage of items that you take ends up selling?
Just about all of them, because we keep them longer than most consignment stores. We keep them for a year, where most consignment stores will keep them for 3 months.
I think I read about that. And tell me a little bit about that, Kim, about how something will go up for a while and then you take it down, put it back up. Is that how it works to keep it fresh?
So we refresh it every 30 days. And then it takes it to the top of the Google search. Their item then appears as a fresh listing. And, you know, sometimes we'll do something to tweak it to make it look better, you know, maybe add a couple words, a new photo. But typically we just relist everything every 30 days. And then we keep it on until it sells.
And it sells.
Mm-hmm. Our consignees have about a 85 to 90% sell-through rate.
Wow. And, what's your cut?
We take, it's a 65-35 split if it's an estate sale. It's a 61-39 split if it's something that's on eBay.
Right. So if I've got something sitting in my basement and you sell it, I get 60%.
61%.
Right. Yeah. I think, and that must be pretty, that seems like a pretty good deal to me.
It is. We're more aggressive than most people, too.
Are you?
Yes.
Okay, so here we are. Things are growing. You've grown 1,700% in the past 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
What's going to happen in the next 3 years?
We're going to quadruple that now.
Do you think so?
We'd like to.
Have you looked at that? Are you prepared to do that?
We are.
We are.
Yes.
We're ready.
Yeah.
What when you look at it, what's the biggest hurdle? What do you have to overcome or what do you have to be prepared for?
Probably the growth, just in terms of how fast we grow in space.
Yeah.
Space and
warehouse
just,
space.
We have 12,000 square feet now, and we could use 25,000 square feet easily.
And this started 3 or 4 years ago?
4 years ago.
Did you have any idea?
No, because we started in 1,000 square feet, and we outgrew that in a month. We went to 5,000 square feet, and now we're in 12.
It's called Shop Melee, M-E-L-E-E, Inc. Mm-hmm. How do people find more information?
www.shopmelee.com. Or they can call 855-494-0004.
We have once in a while something we call Chicago Treasures on here, and this is one, I think. What an organic business. Congratulations
yes.
to both
you.
Of you.
Thank
and
you.
So I'll meet you in the parking lot because some of the stuff I couldn't,
Great.
It's too heavy for me to carry.
Thank
good.
You very much.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN.